Hello, everybody, and welcome to Divine Manifesting. This is Rebecca Grotto, and I am so happy to tell you that Karen Wilson is on the show today. Karen was with us 2 weeks ago, and oh my gosh, just a wealth of information, a beautiful, beautiful soul. Her life is just a giant inspiration for everybody. So welcome, Karen.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, and thank you for that. I enjoy being here.
I know you do. That's wonderful. I enjoy having you, as I'm sure the listeners just are just so blessed to be able to hear all that you have to offer. You know, a couple weeks ago, you were so candid in sharing your story about losing your love, Mark, which is just, oh my gosh, so recently, 6 months ago. And it got me to thinking, Karen, that, you know, so many people that I know really are challenged with losses and crises and changes in, you know, their lives that were unexpected. And again, you know, really had me thinking about how often our lives are anything other than we expect and how that can really throw us off or not, depending on our beliefs and the tools that we have for staying upright. And so, you know, I really wanted to ask you, you know, how do you get through the challenges and the hard times in life? Do you have beliefs that you follow or tools and techniques that you use that could be helpful to the listeners? Because I know that we're just not alone, Karen. I know that most people out there have their fair share of challenges. And I have to say, if anybody's even on a spiritual path, those challenges come faster and fewer or many more than in between, you know.
Yes.
They just seem to come at us. I know, you know, Marianne Williamson is so cute when she talks about when she started on her spiritual path, she thought, you know, God was going to just decorate her home and make it so beautiful. And she said, you know, I thought he would add a beautiful little portico out on the side. And and she said, instead, what happened is the wrecking ball came in and destroyed the house. And he seemed to be saying, oh, Marianne, we just need to start from the ground up. So she's so funny, and I often think of that story where, you know, times in my life where I'm fervently on my path, it just seems like, you know, the walls come crashing down around me. And, you know, and I always work with clients and tell clients these are the opportunities, these are the times to release all that you're ready to release. But easier said than done. So I really wanted to ask you, you know, what your thoughts are on challenging times.
Oh, well, let's just get right to it, Rebecca.
Yes, this is an hour show.
Let's not pussyfoot around here.
Oh, my goodness.
That's great, though. I love that. There's so many things. My head is full. Let's see if I can get to some of them.
Okay.
First of all, you said the two words, and it's a wonderful reminder that in Chinese,
yes,
the pictograph, you know, it's opportunity and crisis,
yes,
come together.
Yep.
One doesn't come without the other. It's like two sides of a coin.
Uh-huh.
And so that's, I think, a perfect way to kind of start this whole dialogue, this,
yes,
discussion about this. Because if we think we're going to have one without the other, we're not being real.
Mm-hmm.
We are splitting things into two things. We're trying to live on this plane of duality rather than begin to really understand and live from kind of this wholeness, unified, vibratory, resonant reality.
Mm-hmm.
That we know, our heart knows it's true, our science even knows it's true, and yet we sort of tend to cleave reality into two parts. So that's a great, thank you for the two words, that's a great place to start. Oh, there's a whole bunch of things. Individually, I think one, when I rule the world,
yes,
one of the things that I'll help people get rid of is the word should.
Mm.
And this is something we can, just like weeding a garden, we can gently weed out this word in our thinking, our inner thinking and our outer language. You should do this, we should do this, should do this. There is no such thing as should.
It's so burdensome, isn't it? That word is so heavy energetically and so burdensome.
Karen Horney calls it the tyranny of the shoulds. Isn't that perfect?
That's beautiful.
It just sort of makes us slaves, as though we have no choice.
Right.
So, you know, this, it's heavy and it's not true.
You can feel it just
in your body.
The enthusiasm, that childlike enthusiasm right out of you.
Yes.
What are you doing today? Well, I should get this done, and I need to, you know, and it's like, oh, gosh, where's the fun in life? Where's the excitement?
And even if there is a task that that needs to be done, if we say, oh, I should do it, it's put on us.
Yes.
If I say, well, I really need to do this.
Right.
It's a choice.
Right. Or even to turn it around even one step further. I've practiced this where, you know, I've had that feeling, the list of things I need to get done and I should be doing. And when I've turned them around, it's like, wow, I have the opportunity to run to the store and grab some milk. And if you even use that word, I have the opportunity, it makes you realize, in my life, as you know, as an American, I have the opportunity to hop in my car and run to the grocery store and choose one of many varieties to feed my incredibly healthy children. And it's like you feel blessed versus burdened. So it's like to even change that wording, it sounds silly, but the wording and the way we say things ends up making us feel certain things. Wow, I have the opportunity to work on my backyard, which implies I have a beautiful backyard to work on.
Well, you know, it's not silly at all, because our language is part of our autonomic nervous system.
Oh.
And so we know in terms of our physiology and our humanness being here that when we are in a state of non-choice, it's highly fearful, anxiety, we feel trapped like a animal, you know, leg in a trap. When we have choice, our physiology changes.
Mm-hmm.
So when we eliminate the shoulds, and I love replacing it, of course, with opportunity. That's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that you were just describing, that kind of lifted sense of expanded possibilities, actually happens. It's not silly. You're right on. So when we can put ourselves, our physiology, as well as our thoughts, into a place of expanded choice, we can feel the blessing, or we eliminate our space. We put ourselves in a tiny box. We should do this, or we're bad. It's a downward spiral. So that's one thing, listening to our language and eliminating shoulds. I think, okay, well, we're on it. Let's go here.
Yeah. Change your mind and you change your life. Isn't that Wayne Dyer's new book? I'm thinking changing the wording and changing the perspective on all situations literally changes your life.
It also changes our physiology, which is really important because our body is our subconscious mind, and our trauma or our past or our stories are stored there. So when we can affect that, we eliminate, we not only lighten this moment, but we also lighten the load that we carry with us to the next moment.
Yes, and because this is the show on divine manifesting, I just have to throw in there that where we are at any given moment, if we're in constriction, we are now attracting that. We are now creating the next moment constricted and repressed and held down and burdened. But if we're creating it from a place of wonderful, look at the opportunities, look what I have and the blessings, each consecutive moment will be just draw in more blessings. So I agree with you. It's our physiology all the way up to our manifestations, and that makes it quite significant.
Yes.
How we word and how we perceive our reality.
It's huge. And along the same line, let's just go along with where we are. Oftentimes, people want to, when we have fear. And by the way, I want to say I know that I'm very alive through this process, but I've been practicing loss for a long time, and it's I have really rough moments, and so I'm actively practicing some of these things, and and they lighten, they pass. And,
I just want to throw in, they pass.
Oh yeah,
it's not something we should not try to be in or get rid of very fast. It's almost allow them to be there, and they do pass. They move. We move through them. They move through us. So you're a shining example of a model of how to walk through grief. I don't know if any of our listeners know, but I am the supervisor and clinical director. I know you know, Karen, of Awakening, a center for exploring living and dying. And as such, this center's entire approach to grief and loss is to hold it as a sacred journey, as an opportunity to open to deeper consciousness and awareness. And so what better than loss, profound mind-numbing loss, than to take us to those places of opening? But I cut you off. Go.
No, that's...
I just wanted to throw that in there.
No, we're just, you know, we start resonating and buzzing so fast.
Yeah.
it's really wonderful. And again, these are just labels for these vibratory states that we experience. When we experience fear or unworthiness or hurt feelings, anger, these emotions, this energy in motion through us, oftentimes we want to get rid of a, quote, negative emotion. Let's say, you know, fear or anger or that horrible unworthiness thing or that should. Before we attempt something new, you know, we have to get rid of that before I can do this. And that's the same exact thing as saying, I want to get rid of some of my energy. The very energy we're going to need to live through the next moment.
Right.
It's just energy. It's just energy. And because we do tend to get what we want, a portion of our energy is taken from us. So, you know, we're feeling unworthy or sad or afraid. God, I got to get rid of this. I got to stop feeling this. Well, more, and then we get more depleted when we try to get rid of those things. I think it's really important that all these feelings, these hurt feelings, are in fact tools. They're just vibrations.
Right.
We label them as good or bad and then react to them.
Right.
The truth is it's just vibratory waves. They're like tools. They are neutral. It's like a knife can, you know, heal or hurt. A hammer, you know, can build or destroy.
Right.
It's just the energy of it. And so I think many of us, I'll include myself, this is one of the things I've learned, have a fundamental misperception of so-called limiting emotions or the bad ones.
Exactly.
You know. Our limitation is not come from the emotion, from the energy in motion itself. That's like watching the wind move through the trees and calling it a bad or a good wind. It's just that movement.
Right.
The power of that. And we've been programmed with certain attitudes about the feeling. So it's the attitude. Within the attitude lies the limitation, not within the feeling.
Yeah, and as somebody who has done a lot of energetic work and done a lot of energetic training, how I heard it was that, in fact, if we're allowing it like the wind through the trees to just move through us without our attachment to it, without our judgmental thoughts, our dualistic thoughts, it's good, it's bad, it's up, it's down, it's right, it's wrong, if we're just allowing it to be, it will flow, it will move through. But the minute that we don't like something, that we apply a judgment to it, slash resistance to it, we actually solidify it within us. So from an energetic perspective, if you look at the energy within your body, the minute that you resist something, whether it's your emotions or your energy or your belief about something, you actually lock that in place and you hold it, you almost anchor it down. And so now it can't move through. And so, again, the importance of really watching our thoughts, you know, because it's almost, there was this expression that we used to use, that which you resist, you become.
Yes. What resists persists.
Yes, there you go. So it was like we would always be just like, you know, and all of a sudden you'd find something in your body where you're like, oh, no, and it was, oh, let it go, let it go. Love that. Love it. Love it all. Mm-hmm. love the gunk. Love it all, because you know the minute you start pushing it away, it's going to persist. It's going to almost like get nailed down in your space, and so, you know, that is a very good, you know, thing to remember, to have our listeners remember, is it's so important to watch how we categorize good and bad, right and wrong. And
because it's so arbitrary, and mm-hmm. it comes from our past, and usually what we see as right or wrong is in somebody else's idea of what was right
exactly.
or wrong that we learned.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's interesting. Allowing it, whatever it is, to be. It's also just allowing ourselves to be.
Mm.
Okay. We have this idea that we are this absolute thing at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
In this moment in time, we are changing as we sit here.
Exactly.
Our breath is changing. The lining of, you know, our stomach is changing. Every 5 days we have a new lining. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're changing. We're circulating, we're assimilating, we're digesting, we're
mm-hmm.
thinking, we're, you know, that we are, that's who we are. We
mm-hmm.
are circulation.
Right.
We are assimilation. It's not something that's separate from us.
Mm-hmm.
So that we, even in the midst of grief, even in the midst of anger, even in the midst of unworthiness, it will pass, but we are shifting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very helpful to remember that is the larger truth.
Right.
That is a reality.
Mm-hmm. And that attachment to the permanence is what actually creates the suffering within.
Right.
Because nothing's permanent.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this, you know, there's a... I don't have many Bible passages in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, raised in very open Buddhist thought, indigenous people growing up in Arizona, a lot of Native American belief. So I've got an interesting background that way.
Mm-hmm.
There is one quote, though. It's Isaiah. That one I know. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks.
Hmm.
This is us, moment by moment. What are you doing? Are you cutting yourself up with a sword?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you beating yourself up with negative thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I was so stupid. What did I do? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So this, I take this, you know, very, each of our individual spirits is this. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's peace and I want more peace on this plane as well as throughout the cosmos, which is the way, that we need to learn to not war with ourselves.
Right.
Anymore.
Right.
And so, so literally sometimes, in the hardest moments, I'll put my hand as though I'm holding a sword, and I'll draw my other forearm kind of across my chest as though I'm holding a shield.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm defensive about what's coming towards me, or I
right.
feel like I have to fight off something, or protect myself, and I go, ugh. And I just put down the sword.
Yes.
And I put down the shield.
Mm-hmm. And that is the most powerful stance to be in.
And everything does shift, is passing, is moving. And I do want the energy, even though my head says, oh, called that a bad feeling. No, it's not. It's my energy. It's life, and it's flowing, and it's flowing, and it's flowing, and I want it, and it's mine, and I'm grateful for it, and the next moment will be filled with more energy than carrying around a
mm-hmm.
sword and a shield.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all, you know, ways.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they're helpful. But
oh, absolutely, Karen. And it really, it comes down to, again, managing, recognizing our beliefs and what we're saying to ourselves and recognizing that we have the option to change those beliefs and replace them with beliefs that are more peaceful and more loving and more inclusive. You know, like you said, if you have your sword and your shield up, you're taking a defensive stance in life.
Yes.
And drawing to yourself persecution because of that stance, but you have a choice. You can lay down your sword. You can lay down your shield and recognize that what harm can come to me? I'm one with all things. I'm, you know, part of all things. I am protected by something much greater than, you know, no harm can come to me, or whatever mantra we want to use. That is absolutely the way. I know Christy and I talk about this in our book on competition, that, you know, competition, it's so limiting and constricting because we're buying into a belief of lack in the world, and therefore we need to fight for a limited share. And we're, you know, but once we recognize this is a universe of unlimited good, you know, anything I choose to create is mine. Nobody can take from me, and therefore there's no reason to compete or to see another as my enemy or as my rival. It shifts the way, you know, I've played with that now for as many years as we've been writing this book, that concept of, oh, she took my idea.
Right.
You know, and it's like, how can she take, you have unlimited ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody can take from you. Nobody, you know, and on one level, yes, we can see that what they did, but it's our choice to then either become very defensive and withholding and close down, or to open to the fact that, you know, it's my pleasure to offer to you an idea that you didn't have before. It's my absolute pleasure to give you all that I have because it's you know, it's unlimited within me,
mm-hmm.
and it's flowing constantly. It's just a very different stance to take, and it moves us from competition to cooperation. But you're touching upon, too, something that I find very interesting, which coincides with a class Christy and I are teaching in October, on self-love. And it's, you know, that recognizing that, you know, that beauty within, that, you know, there is nothing but goodness and divinity within is such a powerful place to come from, and that we are fully empowered. I mean, you said a couple things that led me to that, in that direction. And I think these are all ways to hold the times of challenge when we forget that we are, you know, all that is. You know, when that wave of challenges comes in, I think it is our opportunity to see life's challenge as a problem or as the opportunity. Like you said, I love that. You know, and I use that quite often, the Chinese term for, you know, crisis is opportunity. And, you know, how do we view the obstacles and the times of great struggle or the times of loss? We can see them in a way that victimizes us, that brings us down, makes us feel, you know, put upon, or why me? I laugh with the audience because I always say it's my Nancy Kerrigan syndrome. Why? Why did this happen to me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a good person. Why are these things happening to me?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, get over yourself, Rebecca. You know, they do. And then I think these are times where they have the ability to take me to a deeper level, take me to, you know, to a more open place. When the house burns down, the view of the rising moon is spectacular. So it's like, let the house burn. Let things, you know, fall away from you, and you will become more to your true essence. It's difficult to do because of, as you were saying, Karen, our attachment to those things. You know, but I like the house. I like the windows of the house. I didn't want to see my house burn down. But if we're not attached, we can recognize that, you know, what is coming my way is going to be, you know, even better. The new me, the changing me, is going to be even better. So how I choose to see my challenges can be through a victim's eyes or through the victor's eyes. And, for me, it seems to, you know, it's easier to embrace those challenges knowing that they're here for a reason, they're here for a purpose, and they're sort of forging a new path, rather than seeing it as something's being done to me, or worse, I think, you know, when I work with clients, oftentimes it's not just the something's being done to me, but what's wrong with me that I'm, you know, creating all of this outward upheaval in my life. What's wrong with me? And I think that with the law of attraction, quite often we can get attached to ourselves as these deliberate creators, and we expect everything to then be sunshine and rainbows. And when it's not, you know, people will come to me and say, you know, what am I doing wrong? You know, here I've been putting my intentions out there and trying to raise my vibration, and yet things are falling apart. And I often just kind of snicker because I'm thinking, wonderful, you asked for freedom. So everything that is in the way of freedom is going to fall away. That's just the first step. You know, if you ask for, you know, more love in your life, then everything that is contrary to you loving and being loved is going, it needs to fall away. Wonderful. But then we end up beating ourselves up and say, what am I doing wrong? So I think it's just, it's important to recognize that it's all part of the process. It's all part of, you know, what you ask for. I want more freedom. I want more love. I want, you know.
I think it's also a couple of things have come to mind. One is that the idea of loss, we become acquainted and comfortable with the idea that the house, the relationship,
yes,
is mine.
Uh-huh. Our identity. Uh-huh.
Because if I can't lose something that's not mine.
Uh-huh.
And so that leads us to the question of which I, you know, which I, is it the I or is it me? That the egoistic me,
uh-huh,
likes to own things and,
uh-huh,
find things and is very concrete in its thinking. I am this tall, my eyes are this color, I like this food, you know, very, very defined. This is the man in my life, this is my wife. You know, we have a me-ness,
mm-hmm,
that comes very, very natural as we're human, and as we grow, this the I wakes up, the inner I am, the,
yeah,
this flexible, fluid, and gratitude is natural from this I am place. It's not something we try to create or try to feel. It is the way of this,
mm-hmm,
part of us, so that when loss, for example, loss comes, and loss comes to all of us. You know, we lose a pet. We lose,
mm-hmm,
we move and lose connection, daily connection with friends. I mean, you know, movement and change, of course, is the way of the universe. So when we feel the loss, and the feeling of the loss moves into a self-pity, we're negating the gift of having had that person, that house, that pet at,
mm-hmm,
all.
Yeah, I'm an initiate of the Himalayan tradition, and I know Swami Veda, who is part of that tradition, was just in town, and we all, as initiates, laugh because when we're in his presence, it's just almost comical.
Yes,
how
I
life,
understand.
You know this, Karen.
Yes.
How life falls apart, and then we're calling each other going, you know, I think I'm losing my mind. I'm losing.
That's a good thing.
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, and it's like, because his expansiveness, his presence, and there are times where I'm like, you know, I resist wanting to go see him because I just can't take this, you know. I just can't take, you know, all of the losses that he brings. But it's so fun because in his presence, at times I've, you know, I've actually sort of said, you know, okay, here I am, and things are falling apart, and I just feel him giggling. It's like, you know, so why are you so attached? What did you think, like you were saying, did you really think this was going to define you? And I'm like, well, kind of. I was a little attached to that.
Yes, I do have my moments.
Yes, you know, and it's like the minute you get in his, you know, in his awareness or under his gaze, it just feels like, okay, everybody step back, because I hope you weren't attached to that, because you'll be losing it. And I can feel him just giggling at, oh, you're so silly to have been attached to that. Did you think this was you? And it's like, well, yeah, that's why I'm suffering so much.
No.
I really did like that arm, you know, or, you know, but I think, also, like what you were saying, the identities. I just sent my son to college last year, and it was, oh, it was so hard. And I thought, yes, I can feel that part of myself that is so identified to being a mother. And now who am I if I'm not a mother to this child? And what do I do with myself if I'm not mothering this child? And it was very interesting to watch the places in my mind that were very linked to being this role, this identity, this, you know, this, who am I? And I know so many women who go through that when they send their last child off, and it's like, now who am I? I don't know who I am because mothering was the sweetest part of me, and it's like, but you now get to find the sweetest part of you. And
we also forget, tend to forget, because we're trained through our cognition and through our culture and through living on this plane of duality. We're trained in the physicality of things.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, if, you know, when our kids go away to college, you know, when they're gone, these big words, you know, we forget mothering doesn't end.
Exactly.
Mothering has shifted.
Uh-huh.
And just as we were saying that the moments pass and difficulties pass, and we're so fortunate we can shift our thinking and perception to hasten the passing of some of these moments and still retain the energy, you know, that we actually never lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have it. Have whatever it is we thought we lost, we have
exactly
more when we connect with whatever we love beyond the pure physical realm.
Exactly.
And so we all get lots of practices in this because that is the ultimate reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Sometimes I hear people are just learning and thinking, okay, I'm getting this lesson, so I'll take this lesson and put it back into my physical knowing.
Mm-hmm.
No. Now, that's backwards.
Mm-hmm.
The lesson is a quick, brief opening of the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brief peek at the larger reality that you're being prepared to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Where the physical is fun and a tool and a playground, and it does incorporate this strange thing we call time, but is not the ultimate reality. And so we're getting little peaks at a larger reality, an expanded, vibratory, all-encompassing, comforting, holding, what we would call unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting peaks at that. We're getting practice at that rather than so many hard lessons about what it's like to be human.
Right. You bring up a really good point. So you may get to keep that thing on the physical level, even if that thing is your child or your home or whatever it is that we're holding on to. You may get it on one level, but it doesn't even begin to give you what you could have if you weren't attached to it.
What you all could have.
Yes.
That you both,
that freedom.
Yes.
I had an experience when my son was 7 and my daughter was 3, and I took them to this Disney on Ice at San Francisco Cow Palace, which is this huge arena, and I was just with the kids, and you know, I had coats and umbrellas. It was raining outside, and my purse, and we got there a little late, so we found, you know, in this huge arena, we had to find the right section and then the right row and then the right seat. And we did all this in the dark. And then during intermission, my son said, I want some popcorn. So we all get up, and I'm carrying everything and had my daughter with this, you know, by the hand. And I kept saying to him, he was only 7, stay by me, stay close by me. And walking through all of these crowds, and I'm like, stay right next to me. I don't want to lose you here. Well, lo and behold, he said he had told me, we were out in the huge arena, that he wanted to go back to the seat, which, of course, I would have never let him do on his own. But in the midst of walking through this huge crowd, I lost him. And I didn't find him for 45 minutes later. I was back and forth. The show started again, and now this whole lobby was cleared out, and I really thought I had lost my son because he just vanished. And I checked everywhere. I'd gone back to our seats. I had been everywhere, been to lost and found, and it just felt
that's
like no.
So terrifying.
Oh,
I think that's happened to most of us mothers, if we're honest. Oh,
it was beyond. It was just beyond. It felt surreal to me. And
yes.
At one point, you know, and it was really funny because it just felt like I was getting no help. I kept running around going, are you looking, you know, are you looking for this little boy? What? No, I didn't hear. I didn't know. So it felt like I was all alone. And at one point, I was walking through this just entirely empty lobby. And I remember saying, you know, in my mind's eye, I said, there's two paths. He's kidnapped, or I will find him. And the one that he's been kidnapped lit up in my mind, and I was like, oh, every cell of my body was just charged. And I thought, you know, what is my life, again, what we're talking about. Here I've lost the most precious thing in my life, and he's been kidnapped in my mind's eye. I mean, we're going on 45 minutes. I haven't been able to find him. And I thought, you know, what's the life lesson here? What's the gift? What's the opportunity? And I thought, you know, I had been practicing for many years the concept of detachment. And here it came to me, the greatest thing that I had to learn to be detached from was my children, and were my children. And so I thought, here's the gift. You know, you're pretty detached, so you say, from everything physical. But when it comes to your kids, it's like, oh, no. I don't want to lose one of them. So I thought, here's the gift. And so in my mind, I went very rapidly to what do I need to know to be detached from even my children. And I felt something inside of me grow very, very small to the core of my being, where I felt like I went to pure spirit. And that place you're talking about, Karen, where, you know, what, we're just all one with everything. And I went there, and I could feel my son as pure spirit. And our lives became, this life, this game we're playing on the earth plane, became very insignificant. It was just Alex and I, and where was he going to go? You know, he's just spirit, as am I. And I remember saying to him, you know, I don't know why you're creating this life lesson, but bless you. This does not seem like a fun life lesson, but you got to learn what you got to learn, and I'll just see you on the other side, and you know, and meet me in your dreams. I'll be there, sweetheart. And where were we going to go? You know, we're here. The spirit is cannot be destroyed. Spirit is all there is. So it's like, what did I think I was going to lose? And that place of knowing that led me to this little tiny giggle inside. I just started laughing. You would think probably, well, she's going a little crazy at this point, but I just started laughing because I thought, I found my freedom. I am free from even the notion of being attached to my children. And in that moment of getting it, I felt like in my mind's eye the two paths lit up again, and the one where he's been found had all the light on it. And within 5 minutes, we found my son. And so, but what I took away from that, And what felt so profound to me is that concept of not being attached to the physical form of anything, the physical form of his body or the identity of him being my son or my attachment to, you know, that part of me that mothers, like you said, I mean, I am a mother regardless of my children. I will always be with my son regardless of our forms that we take. And so that was very profound. And what I won, what I got from that lesson, from that incredible gift was I'm free. I'm free from the fear of losing him. I'm free from the worry that I spent so much time, you know, in, which is I don't want him ever to be kidnapped. I'll die if something happens to my children. You know, not that I ever want that to happen, but if should it, I now know that I'll be okay. You know, I will definitely walk through my physical and emotional grief, but I'll be okay. And there's, I hope I'm making myself clear, but there's that place that at the core of our soul, what do we really lose? What changes? I mean, everything changes. What are you going to lose? It's all changing anyways.
Well, it is. It's an ongoing maturation process, developmental stage process.
Yeah.
We can't get there all at once, and it comes and goes and moves like everything else. But this idea that anything is concrete, anything lasts forever. In my work of these 30 years working with people, it's can be a place that we revisit quite often while we live, you know, with so much physicality. In terms of some other practices, techniques, things to help us get through when we are caught up in the awful, you know, in those awful, when we're buckled.
Mm-hmm.
Besides some of the other practical, I'm trying to do practical, you know, putting down the sword and the shield and shifting our thoughts and breathing and remembering, like what you're talking about. It's also touch, because we have that. Touch is such an incredible language. And we can very simply and in peace put our hands in our areas of limitation, and it can have profound results.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if our throat is tight, you know, to move to ourselves, to touch ourselves gently there, or our stomach is in a knot. We have this language, our stomach in a knot. So we move toward ourselves with interest and curiosity and open-handedness, and make a connection of life touching life. And whatever thoughts come, they come and go. And doesn't the content? We're not trying to do anything. You know, we're not trying to massage out a tight muscle. That's all.
Right.
We're just moving toward ourselves with some comfort and some tenderness and some peace, and let ourselves, you know, hold our knee that's aching. You know, and we haven't been able to. We can't go on the hike with everybody else because of our knee, and instead of feeling sorry for ourselves, we do some of these other things and just move toward ourselves. That helps that acceptance. It's not just a mental cognitive idea.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes grounded in our moment-to-moment living experience.
Mm-hmm.
To move closer to what we would think would be a limitation and a problem and a pain, to just move closer, always moving further into, you know, that's the putting down of the sword and the shield, that moving closer and finding out that, you know what, it's just not so awful.
Mm-hmm.
And things do shift. So sometimes touch, sometimes hot baths and showers and water.
It acknowledges where we're hurt.
Yes.
It acknowledges where the pain is, just like a child, you know, comes to you and they, you know, they want you to acknowledge their boo-boo, you know, and that just that as a mother touches, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, I see that this is where you fell down and this is where it hurts. And, as you were saying that, the image that came in my mind, Karen, is loving ourselves. It's being able to, like a mother tenderly kisses her child's boo-boo, being able to recognize and give our love to those places within us.
Yes, we have owies, too.
We have owies. Yes,
and,
we do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, these are ways of, and toning is another thing. These are all things that I do.
Yes, sacred sound, yes.
And, there's many. I'm sure you know of them, too. Some of the powerful tones, one for just bringing in great amounts of physical energy.
Mm-hmm.
When we feel depleted or down or we've been sad or we've been angry, and we've, especially if we've been caught up in the, I want to get rid of those bad feelings, and
mm-hmm.
we're literally cutting out some of our energy,
mm-hmm.
and we notice we've done that, and we go, oh, and we do mm-hmm. some shifting. The tone raw, R-A,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. is specific for bringing in great amounts of physical energy into the body
mm-hmm.
that we can direct for healing, that we can direct for just stamina, maybe, to,
mm-hmm.
to if we're a caregiver or a sick child, just...
Endurance.
Yes,
uh-huh.
yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's wonderful.
And
raw.
Raw.
Uh-huh.
And so what you do is you take
mm-hmm.
a deep breath, and as you exhale, you kind mm-hmm. of just chant it or tone it. You don't try to
mm-hmm.
sing,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. Ain't trying to be pretty.
Right.
You just let a sound come, and you can kind of start with an ER,
mm-hmm.
and then you end up with this big raw
mm-hmm.
until your air all runs out. So you take
mm-hmm.
a deep breath, and from your toes, you go raw. You just
mm-hmm.
let it go, and
mm-hmm.
you do it like 3 times. And
mm-hmm.
if you want to, you can do another set, but I suggest people don't even ever do more than 3 sets of 3 because it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And another one, I'm just going to use a couple that I don't think are real familiar out there. I don't know. I could be wrong. What do I know?
Mm-hmm.
And that is Tho, T-H-O.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tone of healing.
Okay.
And so you take a deep breath, and you say the TH is kind of sharp,
mm-hmm.
And then it's followed by the O, which is a, like you'd say, O-H. So it's so,
mm-hmm.
and in your breath, in your mind, you start down at your feet, and you take your breath, and you go so, and you take your mind coming up through your body, all the way up to your head, and all the way back down through your feet, and it'll go into the earth in one breath.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we have to practice, how fast we take our mind
mm-hmm.
and balance it with how long our breath is.
Right.
But that so,
uh-huh.
And you will feel this incredible wave moving up through you and moving back down.
Mm-hmm.
And, draining out what you don't need, filling you with what you do need. So this combination of so and ra are incredibly clearing, cleansing, empowering, energizing,
mm-hmm.
and balancing.
Well, we are all energy. We're all vibration. So, the sounds that we make carry profound vibration on them. The words we use, the power of the words. So I can totally see that as you're guiding us. I can totally see how that vibration shifts all the energy within us,
yes.
drawing our attention to, those places within and, and healing them, cleansing them.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a good tool to be able to have. And to know that we're empowered to have these tools. We don't have to just be with, we don't need to be with the stuff and hold on to it in a yucky way. We have so many opportunities to see them as a gift and to shift them and to heal them and to become empowered, through them,
mm-hmm.
leading us to greater freedom. So those are great tools to be able to have.
Great.
When we're feeling depleted, we can say, you know, rah, and so, and, you know, and reclaim our energy and balance our energy.
And renew.
Yeah.
So I'm about halfway through. I'm in the process of creating some audio tapes with some of these sounds.
Oh, great!
And,
can't wait.
And I just call it body scan, you know, and soul scanning, and for this very, very reason. So again, I'm getting back to the pace of the outer world slowly.
Uh-huh.
By fall, hopefully, I will have a schedule of my learning circles, which are seminars.
Uh-huh.
Everything's a circle. You know, if I'm not if I'm teaching without learning, I'm not teaching.
Exactly.
So the learning circles will begin again. I've been doing those for 17 years, and some of these body scans and these self-healing, self-regulating, self-loving techniques will be. I'll have some of those. If anybody's interested, I am putting those together and not rushing, because the depth of the silence and the love that I am living in now, loving on both sides of the river with Mark on one side of the river and me on this side of the river, I'm learning a lot. So, so some of that information will be in some of the work that will evolve from this beautiful and deep, tender, expanded place.
Oh, that's wonderful. I can't wait. So, you know, I think this has been such a great hour, Karen, being able to listen to you and your wisdom. And you know, I know for myself and my clients, you know, so many of us walk through times of struggle. And I think something that I work a lot with changing your thoughts, changing your beliefs, really watching the programming that comes in and knowing that you have the opportunity to, you have the empowerment and the freedom to change the way you perceive your life and the way you perceive the challenges and the way that you perceive all the good things happening to you too. And, you know, something that I say to people is I think the first step is to really look at when you're struggling, what was your expectation? We have if we're struggling during our day and we're just getting frustrated and angry and why is this happening, it's like, well, what was your expectation of how the day was supposed to go or this period of your life or, you know, whatever? What was your expectation? And that ties in with what we first started talking about. There's usually a should in our mind. It shouldn't be looking like this.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be here. It shouldn't be like this. It's supposed to be like this. And that expectation is not in alignment with the truth of where we need to be, because the truth is we're exactly where we need to be, being given all of the gifts we need to be given at this moment in time. So I think if we can really look at the expectation we had and correct that and come back to, you know, finding the opportunities, knowing that we're exactly where we need to be, even if we feel like we're stuck in the muck and mire, even if we feel like, you know, this is just not good. But if we recognize that I'm exactly where I need to be, then let me look for the opportunities and the gifts in this and find my blessings. And something that I say to clients all the time, whether they're going through a divorce or they're, you know, having their empty nest or whatever it is that they're struggling with that they didn't expect to be struggling with. I didn't think I was going to get divorced. I didn't think he was going to cheat on me. Whatever it is, I always say to them, what meaning do you want to assign to this crisis/opportunity? What meaning? Because the meaning that you assign to it will mean the difference between being victimized or being blessed. And so, you know, I think another tool that people who are listening can use is to really look at, from the smallest of struggles to the greatest of losses, what meaning do I want to assign to this? And this will become, in hindsight, my absolute blessing, because it will have forged and have cleared away, and it will have taken me to an incredible place, and for that I will look back on this time in my life and feel so blessed, or it will be the thing that I will always and forever hold as my failure, as my downfall. And so I think it's so important, just even in our day-to-day lives, to say, how do I want to hold this? What meaning do I want to assign to this?
You know, there is a philosopher that says that human beings are meaning makers, period.
Say that again, Karen.
Human beings are meaning makers.
Meaning makers, that's wonderful.
We basically make meaning out of anything.
Yes.
The color red means this. This
yes.
pen I like in my hand or I don't, it's a good pen or a bad pen. I'm just,
yes.
Nothing intrinsically. Pretty much everything on this plane is neutral, folks, including
exactly.
our emotions. And whatever, and I would go even further with the should.
Uh-huh.
I just say that shoulds are lies.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Just that simple.
It's, yep.
We're lying to ourselves.
Uh-huh. You're shoulding upon yourself.
Yep. Yeah. Stop shoulding on yourself and everybody else.
Yep.
It happened.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So then the meaning, and it's interesting, you use the word assign. I find that very interesting.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Assigning meaning.
Uh-huh.
The immediate meaning will come to us from whatever meaning we have put on this idea or event or type of event or task
uh-huh.
in the past. So that automatically, it's an eye-opener, whoa.
Uh-huh.
I have, in the past, assigned this meaning to this. That's why I'm feeling this way.
Can I interject? I think a lot of times we haven't even assigned the meaning. We've just
someone
taken
else
up
has.
Exactly what
Absolutely.
Somebody else has given us. Red should mean, black should mean death.
Yes.
We've assigned, we haven't even had freedom of consciousness to assign our own meaning
exactly.
to things.
Exactly.
Because we've just been programmed. So, yes.
That's why it's a lie.
Yes, that's exactly why it's a lie.
It's a lie.
Uh-huh.
And it's sometimes even a well-intentioned lie
yes.
that somebody else told us when we were young. You know,
yes.
remember Santa Claus, everybody? You know?
Right.
I mean...
And it might have been a well-intentioned lie that 3 centuries ago
Absolutely.
Was the truth.
Absolutely.
But you no longer have to cut the ends off the turkey because our ovens are big enough. You know?
Absolutely.
There's that one where, why do you cut the ends off the turkey? Well, because my mom does and my grandmother did. And then it's like... come to find out, well, Grandma's oven was just small.
Right.
We're still cutting the ends off our turkeys.
And it's true.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So,
that's very good.
You know, this yeah. is all such, and yes, and whatever our perspective, whatever meaning we carry, we hold something in,
uh-huh.
we surround something with, it's like the blanket we pick up the baby with, you know, whatever meaning we wrap something in, will be our reality
right.
and our experience of it.
Right.
And that is what lies within us. That and it's really such a... It's so powerful. I think sometimes we, again, Marianne Williamson, are afraid of our power
mm-hmm.
more than
mm-hmm.
in our beauty.
Oh, I think when I get around some of the masters like Swami Veda, the immenseness should be absolutely, you know, I want to go there. But instead, it just creates fear. It's like, this is too immense. There's no boundaries.
Mm.
But, and I will say, what we're talking about when you're discussing the lies, I know we only have a few minutes and let's start wrapping up.
Okay.
But when you're talking about the lies, you know, I'm offering a workshop starting next month in September, and it's all about this, releasing the programming and the lies and all of the energy blocks within that are not ours. I think you're absolutely right, Karen. If it's ours, if it's our emotion, if it's our belief, if it's anything pertaining to us energetically, we need to hold on to that. We need to work through it and move through it and it will feel very different than when we're holding on to somebody else's energy and programming and beliefs, and we're cutting the turkey off at both ends, and it's not making sense in our lives. And so I'm offering a workshop in a month starting September 1st, and anybody who wants to visit my website, Rebecca Grotto, GRADO.com, you'll find all my fall classes. I've just... composed them all and ready to roll for the fall. But it's all about getting to the core, our truths, residing in our own individual truths, and getting rid of all of the lies that are preventing us from living our best lives. So I really love that you brought that up. And also, Christy and I will be starting in October our self-love workshop, really getting to the core of your soul and finding who you are and holding that image so firm and so close.